Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With a message for everyone paying big wireless way too much. Please, for the love of everything good in this world, stop. With Mint, you can get premium wireless for just $15 a month. Of course, if you enjoy overpaying, no judgments, but that's weird. Okay, one judgment. Anyway, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan, equivalent to $15 per month required. Intro rate first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. It's tax season, and we're all a bit tired of numbers. But here's one you need to hear. $16.5 billion. That's how much the IRS flagged for possible identity fraud last year. Now here's a good number. 100 million. That's how many data points LifeLock monitors every second. If your identity is stolen, they'll fix it. Guaranteed. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
Top Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
So glad you're here. Brian Kilmeade Show coming your way this hour. Rich Lowry, National Review. We're also going to be following a lot of stories today. SpaceX mission to go get the astronauts, bring them home, starts. SpaceX got to go get them. Boeing leaves them there. I hope they're paying the bill. But just leave it to Elon Musk, that person that half the country doesn't seem to like, even though he's probably unreplaceable. Meanwhile, J.D. Vance and the Second Lady are hosting the Irish Prime Minister, who seems to love the Palestinians, condemns Israel, and seems to be a left-wing organization, which made me put off my trip to Ireland. House and Wayne's Committee will mark up a resolution, and they'll talk about the Doge-related bills. So I look forward to a lot of action on Capitol Hill. Meanwhile, we are going to be following a big trial, and that is with this Syrian-born Columbia student who graduated and is still leading anti-Israel, anti-Semitic, out-of-control demonstrations in New York. He is going to be deported unless this judge stops it. We'll follow all of that, so let's get to the big three.
Number three.
Today we made an offer that the Ukrainians have accepted, which is to enter into a ceasefire and into immediate negotiations to end this conflict in a way that's enduring and sustainable. We'll take this offer now to the Russians. The ball is now in their court.
No kidding. Ukraine outlines a ceasefire term, signs mineral deals, gets America weapons flowing again. Now we will see if Russia is really ready to stop fighting. Trump and Putin scheduled to speak.
Number two.
Number one, it's a great product, as good as it gets. And number two, because this man has devoted his energy and his life to doing this. And I think he's been treated very unfairly by a very small group of people.
It's true. And guess what? They're targeting Tesla. Musk is in the crosshairs and not backing down as Trump touts Tesla and his enemies target the company. What he's doing now and how he's playing a role in scaling the education department down to size.
Number one.
What President Trump is doing is insane. It shows there are no bounds around President Trump. And the other thing that's not talked about is what's going on within the administration in terms of how they're treating the Constitution and laws. I think all of that is bad for the attraction of capital.
CNBC's Steve Leisman keeping an eye on the big picture. Trump economics team goal is to bring manufacturing jobs back to America, causing wild losses on Wall Street for the last 2 or 3 days. What is the plan and the next moves on tariffs, trade, and more? First off, I have to tell you, the market's going to be happy because inflation went up less than everybody thought this month. Remember, it was supposed to go up at 3%. It went up at 2.8%. They will like that. Europe has responded to the Donald Trump 25% tariffs on steel and aluminum. That just came across now. The market doesn't like that. They don't like the sudden changes when it comes to tariffs. In Canada, Doug Ford came out as our Ontario premier and said, I am going to cut off electricity to three states. They get it from Ontario, Michigan, Minnesota, and parts of New York. And then he realized Trump hit him with 50% tariffs. And just before it got into play and where it became official, Doug Ford called. Cut to.
Well, they made the concession of dropping the additional 25%. They added up to 50% on the steel and aluminum and a meeting. We need to sit down at the table. We need to move forward this USMCA deal as soon as possible. Every single day that goes by, We see the market down over $4 trillion. Inflation's happening. Threats of assembly plants in the auto sector closing down on both sides of the border. Manufacturing, consumer confidence is down. We need to sit down, get this done. And I just want to make a deal that's a fair deal for both countries. And let's unite and let's stick together.
So Doug Ford is a conservative. I had him on the air on Fox and Friends. I talked to him in the break and he goes, Brian, I've been watching Fox and Friends forever. I like Fox News. So he cannot look weak. That's what Greenland, that's what Panama, that's what Mexico, and in this case, and that's what Ukraine. Every time you take on their leader, the people rally around them, even in Canada. The docile Canadians are neighbors. But when it comes to trade, there has to be a rebalancing. Trump said, Trump's remarks helped close the Dow 478 points down, 478 points down, or 1.14%. Inflation, though, is a positive. We'll look to see what happens there. More good news for the economy. By the way, up 277 points. More good news for the economy. It looks like the House has got a budget deal. They're going to have a clean CR with an increase in some cuts, but an increase in defense spending. Now goes to the Senate. As long as it looks like we're not shutting down the government, the market will get a boost there. I would not be surprised when it's all said and done, the market regains all its losses. Cut one.
The right thing to do is what we're doing. We're going to get our jobs back, and we're not going to be left at. Now, I will say this, that already Canada, and I respect very much, as you know, there's a very strong man in Canada who said he was going to charge a surcharge or a tariff on electricity coming into our country. He has called and he said he's not going to do that. Okay, he's not going to do that. And it would have been a very bad thing if he did. And he's not going to do that. So I respect that.
Yeah, so they have to deal directly. And the new Canadian prime minister will have the job for a few months. He's going to be a tough guy because he wants to win re-election. And when Trump takes you on, the Canadians get their back up. That's what it seems. So the EU hit back with tariffs on bourbon boats, motorcycles. I think that's it, about $28 billion. We'll see how that goes. The big restructuring and the big plan, the grand plan is to put the tariffs to the point where it now pays for Americans to make it here or pays for other companies to make things here, whether it's Honda, a chip manufacturer in Taiwan, or Hyundai. They're beginning to make it here because it is enticing with the incentives that we have in place. We'll see how it goes. I thought Charles Casparino, who's a real great business reporter, put it in perspective right now that we shouldn't get caught up in what the market's doing. Cut eight.
So this is a transitionary period. And again, you know, let's face it. The last 4 years, who did really well? You know, the fat cats, the people I write about all the time, they did great. Average Americans didn't do so well. They don't have huge 401ks. They get crushed by inflation. This economy has been inflated. Financial assets have been inflated, so they can't afford it. So we're getting a little comeuppance for the fat cat crowd here.
Well, yeah, we'll see. So see how it goes. You know, one of the first things that Scott Bessin said to us when he was a constant guest over the last 2 years, and people would say, you could introduce him as the likely Treasury Secretary or a candidate to be Donald Trump Treasury Secretary. And I thought, you know, I never really heard of him, but his success is crazy. The first thing he said is income inequality is a huge problem. You cannot keep people from getting significant raises in their quality of life while others get too much money. And I thought, wow, wasn't that an interesting perspective? Here's a guy hanging out with billionaires, is a billionaire, and says, I'm worried about the working class. Go, man, he might be with the right guy. Next thing you know, he gets the job. And this is in the big picture what's happening. We're trying to move the ship around, and it's a big cruiser, and it's going to take a while. On the other side, people have shown no patience and do not like the volatility. And there's a story in the Wall Street Journal today that some on Trump's trade team and economic team aren't happy with the way Trump is going up and down with tariffs. And they say, can we just pick a plan? And others just going to implement what Trump wants to do. So Gary Cohen and others were somebody that would push back on tariffs with Trump, and he'd get some of those counter arguments. Okay, that's not really happening now. And Larry Kudlow says we used to pretty much think on the same page, but we'd also wait and debate before we just implement. That was more the economic of the 45th president, not the 47th president. So Steve Weissman of CNBC, he's not having it. He just said, I can't believe what we're seeing here. Cut five.
I'm going to say this at risk of my job, Kelly, but what President Trump is doing is insane. It is absolutely insane. It is about the eighth reason we've had for the tariffs, and now he's saying he's putting 50% tariffs on Canada unless they agree to become the 51st state. That is insane. There is just no other way of describing it. And the trouble, Kelly, is that it shows there are no bounds around President Trump. This is very different from the first administration, where there were people around him who seemed to, I don't know what the word is, but smooth over some of the edges now. And the other thing that's not talked about, Kelly, is what's going on within the administration in terms of how they're treating the Constitution and laws. I think all of that is bad for the attraction of capital.
Right. And of course, I'm sure this clown said nothing when Joe Biden was ignoring the Supreme Court and forgiving student loans at a dizzying rate. I'm sure that this guy did nothing and said nothing when the infrastructure bill was passed. Nobody ever implemented any of the programs. They just jammed the money down everyone's throat with green projects. So he does not like Trump, obviously, and that's great. I mean, that makes for a better channel, better interest. But I think that his panicking just to eliminate you being an expert on business. You're trying to talk about business. Talk about the approach and strategy. He feels there is none. I never thought, I haven't met anyone who says there is no strategy, especially considering that he said, I'm going to rebalance trade, and my favorite word is tariffs. Why are you surprised about anything? So I want to fast forward and talk about what happened in Ukraine yesterday. Ukraine has accepted a deal and says Marco Rubio will take this to the Russians. Vladimir Zelensky says, I received the report about what his delegation did, and he feels good about it. But what I appreciate what the Ukrainians are doing, they actually go into a little bit more detail about what they would do for confidence measures. It says Ukraine is seeking peace, and they go through that same thing. Ukraine proposed three key points. Silence in the skies, no air flights, stopping missile strikes, that would include drones, I imagine, bombs and long-range drone attacks, okay? Then silence at sea, real confidence-building measures. If that happens, he'll believe a ceasefire is taking place. Then diplomacy will be ongoing. Then we'll have a release of prisoners of war and detainees. I also want the kids back, don't you? The Ukrainian children, they were kidnapped and forced into adoption. So I would love to see some of these measures taken. But I've said this from the beginning. I don't think the Russians are sincere. Unless they really are ready to collapse, and we are great at getting Russian intelligence wrong. But Peskov came out yesterday, he's a spokesman for Vladimir Putin, and said, we shouldn't get ahead of ourselves. And meanwhile, Kyiv launched 337 drone attacks at Russia over in Moscow. And then Russia was bombing Vladimir Zelensky's hometown, killing a 47-year-old and wounding a woman. It's great. They love civilian targets, these guys. All right, so when we come back, I'll take your calls. Bottom of the hour, I'll put this in perspective. Keep in mind, I used to sit down and we used to have two, and we try to find that third story. Just with Trump, every day, we legitimately have seven storylines that are very intriguing because he is putting his team is totally in place, the first level of secretaries, and he's putting them all into action right away, whether it's Gaza, whether it's Ukraine, whether it's tariffs, whether it's drilling oil and gas, all on down, whether it's getting Doge gutting or leaning out every major division of the government, the latest being education. Yesterday, Department of Education laid off half their workforce. Doge has been there. They made their recommendations. It's like having an auditor. And then the education department with Linda McMahon in charge says, okay, I need half of you to go. There's a lot going on. So glad you're here. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Taking America back.
Canada's been very abusive of the United States for many years.
One ally at a time.
It is an act of economic warfare.
The trade imbalance and our trade deficit has gone up 200%+.
Free Canada! Free Canada!
With Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, I'm Trey Gowdy, host of the Trey Gowdy Podcast. I hope you will join me every Tuesday and Thursday as we navigate life together and hopefully find ourselves a little bit better on the other side.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I happen to know and love a lot of people that voted for Trump, and they're not fascists, and they're not looking to destroy democracy or all of those kinds of. But if you go to that extreme, there's nowhere to come back after when you've already said those things. And so, like, that's just not the way government really works.
So they're talking about some of the extremists on the left and the signs they held up, the way they're acting, the constant cursing, now the defilement of the Tesla showrooms, the Tesla cars. I mean, it's unbelievable. I just wrote some of these down to give you an idea how bad it was. Last week, 7 Tesla charging stations right near Boston set on fire. Hundreds of protesters. I showed you this video. You probably saw it outside a Tesla showroom in New York City. That happened on Saturday. 4 Tesla Cybertrucks torched. This is because a guy is cutting down the size of government and leaning out every major department because we're $36 trillion over debt, $2 trillion on every budget submitted. So get this. Before the pandemic, all-time record expenditures, $4.1 trillion. After the pandemic, $6.1 trillion. Now that we don't need any extra spending because of the pandemic, paying people to stay home, same $6.2 trillion. So this president, the former president, put in all his huge spending bills, the rescue plan we didn't need, the infrastructure plan is all green. Then we have the Inflation Reduction Act, which was mislabeled. And those are just 3 of the major 4 spending programs. They were trillions of dollars. The guy couldn't even implement the infrastructure deal. He couldn't even get all his green energy out the door. And now the money is sitting there, but it's renewed every year. So now you're taking it out on Elon Musk. It's insane. I love what the president did yesterday because people think, well, billionaires don't care. You care. You got people working for Tesla that aren't billionaires. I mean, if you're a car salesman, you have a good year, $150,000. And now you go, I'm not going to buy a Tesla because I'm going to get a Nazi symbol on it. I'm not going to go buy a Tesla today because there's protest right in front of the showroom. It's a Saturday. I think I'll go shopping for a car. I guess not. Meanwhile, you know what these idiots were chanting? We want clean air, not another billionaire. I mean, do I have to tell you how stupid that is? Tesla, electric car. We want clean air. You got clean air, and you have a billionaire. So he said that Trump bought one yesterday. I thought that was great. He says he's upset that this guy's been targeted. He's upset that stock price is down something like 80% in Europe, too. And he went and bought one, and he's going to donate it. He's going to leave it there. And then you have Elon Musk says he's committed to making Tesla the number one car company in the country. So he is doubling, tripling down, despite the Molotov cocktails being tossed at Tesla factories in all these different states. Here's Trump, cut 11.
Hello, President Trump. Are you looking to buy or lease today?
Well, I'm going to buy. And I'm going to buy because, number one, it's a great product, as good as it gets. And number two, because this man has devoted his energy and his life to doing this. And I think he's been treated very unfairly by a very small group of people. And I just want people to know that you can't be penalized for being a patriot. And he's a great patriot.
So... And he said, I know he's probably really ticked off and he's got to be concerned, even though he's got the best security firm watching him personally, about what's going on. Who knows if they're targeting his kids or his girlfriends. They're certainly targeting his products. They can't touch SpaceX. They can't touch the chips in the brain, but they can chuff Tesla. That's what they're trying to do. And keep in mind, he just told everyone what he was up to. Cut 15.
We go bankrupt as a country. There's no Social Security. There's no Medicare. There's no nothing. And to echo what the president was saying, what really matters is moving people from jobs that are relatively low productivity in government to high productivity in the private sector, increasing the true output of products and services. That's the real economy. That's what actually enables Americans to have a higher standard of living, and that's what's happening. And that's, I think, you'll see the truth of that in the months to come.
Yeah, and bottom line is that's what he's trying to do. I, in the big picture, people are going to look at this period and say, I don't understand it. He's going to be there for about 2 years. And by the way, he gave a super PAC to support Trump and other candidates $100 million yesterday. He's doubling and tripling down.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
when you're negotiating with someone and they're not paying attention and they're disagreeing, the president, who's the best deal maker ever to sit in that chair, is going to say, here's my response. And then all of a sudden, shockingly, they respond.
That is Howard Lutnick, Commerce Secretary, defending Trump's tariffs. And by the way, the market is up right now, 152 points on good news when it comes to inflation. The president making some remarks right now, and we'll get you some of that. Let's bring in Rich Lowry, National Review. Rich, welcome back. So this this tariff stuff is really taking a toll on the market. You write that we should not be so focused on Canada. Why do you think that we're making a mistake there?
I just don't think Canada's not China, right? It's not a national security threat. It's not Mexico. There aren't huge quantities of fentanyl and people coming over the border. Well, we have fewer people, thank goodness. And these protectionist gripes that the president has expressed are totally legitimate: dairy, lumber, banking. But these are long-running concerns that can easily be renegotiated when the USMCA is up next year for review. So there's no reason to be threatening to nuke Canada. And it's not good for Canada, but it's also not good for us. You know, I think the sheer uncertainty about the on again, off again, enormous tariffs. I mean, these are kind of be Smoot-Hawley level tariffs. They take us far beyond what the pre-NAFTA and pre-Reagan agreement in the 1980s were. It's hurting us too. So I would just work this out like we're friends the way we are and focus on something else.
Here's what Kevin O'Leary, Canadian living in America, said. Cut nine.
We're in a little bit of a tiff, Jesse.
Is that what they
call
it?
A little poo-poo right now.
A little poo-poo?
Because there's an election going on in Canada.
Right.
They got to give them another 60 days to choose a new leader. And the guy will have the same mandate that Trump has, a majority mandate for 4 years. And then let's start negotiating a union of the economies. Listen, what really happened was Trudeau really, for lack of better words, excuse my French, pissed Trump off.
Mm-hmm.
He's gone. He got whacked on Sunday. Let's focus on the next 60 days. Let Canada elect a new leader and let's cut a deal.
Your thoughts about that? He's pretty right. I mean, he's pretty accurate.
Well said. Yeah, well said. Who's not annoyed by Justin Trudeau? But he is on his way out. And what we don't want to do is make it harder for Pierre Poilievre. I'm terrible with my French, so I'm probably mispronouncing it.
The conservative.
Right. I just call him Pierre. Yeah, he's the conservative alternative. But he's a conservative populist. He's very talented. He's going to be much more a Trump guy than Justin Trudeau was. Not that that's saying much, but I think actually Trump will like him. And yeah, cut a deal. And I think, you know, things like an economic union, I'm not sure whether I go all the way there, but there's the kind of things that could be up for discussion. Should we have a common tariff policy against the rest of the world to kind of ring fence U.S. and Canada together? All that's worth discussing. But at the moment, we're making it harder for Pierre to get elected and driving the Canadians insane. I mean, they're talking, Brian, about how they need a European nuclear guarantee against the United States. It's just they're a little deranged at the moment.
Right. Between that and what's going on with the Gaza situation and Adam Bowler talking to Hamas, and then you have in the Ukraine situation, now it seems that Ukraine has come to the table on what a ceasefire would look like. And now it's up to Russia to come across. And we'll talk about that in a second. But what he's trying to do, and I think it's pretty clear, he wants to painfully turn the ship around. He wants to bring manufacturing back to our country. He wants to level all tariffs. He wants to bring some of that revenue in to decrease taxes and have that revenue from tariffs replace the revenue that would be with higher taxes. And with America with more money in their pocket, might be able to afford more expensive products. But more than that, they would be wealthier. So he's trying to turn the focus of the economy around, and with Doge working, try to balance the budget and no longer be growing the deficit, at least get it in the right direction.
Yeah, so that's the theory. And I think, you know, at the margins, if you have higher tariffs, you're going to have more manufacturing. The question is whether that's an economical way to get more manufacturing. The research tends to say you have all these costs spread out among everyone that are paying for those increase manufacturing jobs in a way that doesn't make sense. So if for me, I would focus, yeah, China's a national security issue. So that's different. But otherwise, I would just be focusing on how do we make our environment here at home as inviting to manufacturers as possible.
Which he's doing. which is why we're getting some of it back.
Like deregulation and a favorable tax policy, low energy costs, all that's great, and doesn't cost anyone else in the country anything. And then on DOGE, I just don't think DOGE isn't going to balance the budget. You know, it might make the federal government more efficient and the workforce smaller and all that's great. But the big numbers you'd need to get to balance the budget are defense and especially all the entitlements, which Trump doesn't want to touch for political reasons. So we're not going to balance the budget.
So Medicare, Medicaid, I think we could get, I think that their DOGE can do a lot of progress, not touching payouts, but touching, getting rid of abuse and getting rid of and making the system leaner. Making less people more automated, using AI, and making sure the people getting benefits are actually eligible for it. One thing Joe Biden did subtly that was devastating, according to reports, is that on Medicaid, there's really no follow-up to make sure that people are actually who they say they are, to make sure that there's make sure the people getting payments are actually eligible to get payments. And that right now, there's a review every 3 years. If you just bring that review every 6 months, that would put pressure on the system. Number two is when it comes to Social Security, don't touch people's payouts. But for people who make over $162,000, once you hit the threshold of Social Security, which could be the first 6 months of the year, you're not taking any more money out. We have to decide to take for high earners. They're not going to feel it. Take additional security as Social Security out of the people's paycheck in order to make it solvent for the next 10 years. I don't know many people who are multimillionaires who will say, why is it that, you know, they're still taking Social Security out after a year? I mean, they're not going to feel the $100 or $200. I mean, that would balance it out totally almost right away. Also, the rich people that don't want Social Security, like Ken Langone, says, I cannot stop my checks from coming to me.
Yeah.
He founded Home Depot. He's a multibillionaire. And he says, they said, well, you could do it with what you want. Well, that's not going to help balance the budget. You got to stop mailing it to people that don't want it.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally agree with all of that. The first, totally within DOGE's ambit, would be great if it could do it. The latter idea, which I agree with too, and I think it's an excellent one, would require Congress to do something. And then you just get into politics. As soon as you touch any Social Security, the Democrats are like, see, we told you they're ending Social Security. And Republicans have never won that debate before. Maybe this would be different. But so far, there's not any appetite for it either in the White House or on Capitol Hill.
Well, we know how bad, you know, we know how much Democrats hate billionaires unless they need donations. So if you say, I'm going to tell the millionaires they're going to have to pay for the entire year, well, the threshold's now $300,000, I can't see them being upset by it. It's usually Republicans that would be upset by it. Yeah. But let's just get into that debate later. I want to talk about what you see happening with Russia and Ukraine, all your international experience, knowledge, and contacts. It looks like Zelensky says, here's the framework for a ceasefire. They're still bombing each other at this moment. Let's start cleaning out the skies, then keep the waterways. And then we'll talk about different ways to ratchet down and have confidence-building measures. What do you think Russia's response to JETA is going to be?
Well, that's the big question, right? So I always thought this was a natural play for Ukraine, Brian. Zelensky, get on Trump's good side, which he did not manage to do. We talked about that Oval Office meeting. But then make it clear that you're the side that wants peace and you're the side that's more reasonable and put the ball in Russia's court. Now, the ball is in Russia's court. And the question is Russia just going to take it? Or are they going to say, no, we're only going to take this if we get the guarantees right now? We won't even do a ceasefire unless we get guarantees that Ukraine is not in NATO. And then we'll have to see from there. But so far, you know, Russia, although Trump has said, I know they want peace and they want a deal, there hasn't been any public indication of it.
Here's Dan Hoffman, the former Russian CIA station chief. And by the way, Peskov rolled in. He had a statement that said, don't get ahead of ourselves when it comes to ceasefire. So here's Dan Hoffman, Cut 23.
Vladimir Putin wants to at least annex four provinces where fighting is ongoing. Russia doesn't have full control of those. He's going to want to limit any foreign troops that are deployed to Ukraine after a settlement to this war. And he doesn't want Ukraine to join NATO. Those are all parts of a post-conflict deal. And Ukraine, of course, wants security guarantee. So the question for Russia is, do they want a pause in the fighting? Would they agree to a ceasefire? If past is prologue, they won't. They've broken ceasefires, most recently in 2019. But this time might be different. Vladimir Putin has really suffered hundreds of thousands of casualties to his forces, and they too may need a break.
So we are great at not knowing what's going on in Russia, hence the Cold War. So we really don't know. We, you know, people were doubting that they were going to do this invasion. So your thoughts about what Russia will do?
I don't know. I think, though, the key threat we're going to have to make at some point to get this process moving on the Russian side is not to say we're going to do sanctions, because we've already done a lot. I'm not really clear how much more we can sanction them. And then we're going to do tariffs when we have no trade with Russia. It's going to be, you know what, Ukraine's getting more weapons and with fewer limits than ever. And maybe that would have an effect. But if I were Putin, I'd be worried that that's going to be Trump's reaction. So I might be, as that expert was suggesting, I might be more a little more reasonable than I have been in the past.
Here's what Marco Rubio said. Cut 22.
Today, we made an offer that the Ukrainians have accepted, which is to enter into a ceasefire and into immediate negotiations to end this conflict in a way that's enduring and sustainable and accounts for their interests, their security, their ability to prosper as a nation. We'll take this offer now to the Russians, and we hope that they'll say yes, to peace. The ball's now in their court.
So Steve Witkoff's going to go over there, not the Secretary of State. Do you find that different?
I think Marco is in a very unusual situation because there are all these special envoys and czars and people that he didn't necessarily want in his own State Department. So he's a little bit of a precarious situation. But this is what Trump likes. He likes a lot of different players bouncing off of each other. And we'll see. You know, Witkoff's good at this stuff.
Yeah. Lastly, Mike Johnson, Speaker of the House, announced that they got it across the finish line, a continuing resolution that would fund the government until September. Cut 27.
Well, this was a big vote on the House floor. The Republicans stood together, and we had one Democrat vote with us to do the right thing, and that is to fund the government. This was a clean CR. It freezes funding. It's a responsible thing to do, and we're ensuring that troops continue to get their paychecks and TSA agents continue to do their work and be paid, and essential workers on the border and elsewhere are doing their jobs.
So he's very happy. Now all the pressure's on the Senate. How does that play out?
You know, they may say that this bill has some plus-ups for defense and reductions in discretionary spending. You might have Senate Democrats say, no, we just need it to be at current levels and keep that, and then we'll go along with it. But I just think they will go along with it one way or the other, eventually, the Senate Democrats, because I don't think you can say, oh, it's so terrible what Elon Musk is doing, throwing people out of work and putting them in an uncertain situation, and then say, oh, by the way, we're shutting down the government. So I think they'll end up going along.
Well, can you explain to me how it works? You might not know either, so don't feel bad if you don't, but you seem to know everything. The way I understand it, it's going to be in front of the Senate, and you need 60 votes to pass it. And obviously, if you get 53 votes, Rand Paul, I'm not sure what he's doing, 52, 53 votes, and you don't get the 60, obviously the Democrats are the one who shut down the government. Right. But I understand it's just for cloture. Then you need a simple majority to pass it?
I don't know. I don't know. That would kind of surprise me, I guess, that you'd need just a simple majority, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the way I understand it, at one point, whether it's for cloture or for passage, you need 60 votes. So who's going to go along with it? Senator Kelly said, hey, you know what, I'm still up in the air. Fetterman seems to be a logical guy. Yeah, I mean, would Warner do that?
Yeah, I think argument Democrats will make if there's a shutdown is like, well, look, Republicans have unified control of Washington. This is their job, but they can't do it without some Democratic votes. And that's why at the end of the day, I think they'll go along, even if there's some, you know, this has happened a lot, 12-hour shutdown, you know, on Saturday. It doesn't really mean a lot.
So a prediction from you. After this, Speaker Johnson just told us on Fox and Friends that he said, we're going to do regular order. We're going to ask all 12 budget committees to come up with their budget for their unit, and they're going to put it forward, wrap it into one bill, and then send it over. And I said, are you going to get this? And he goes, yes. And I go, why haven't you done that in the past? And he said, well, you never, our president would never even get us a frame with the president, never give us a framework for a budget. Now we got Trump's going to give us a budget in April, and then we'll work off that, and we'll get it done by September. And that, to me, would stop the Thomas Massey's and the Chip Roy's from saying, I'll never pass it. I want things to go regular order. They'll get the debate in the budget in committee. Your thoughts about that actually happening?
Well, I mean, it would be fantastic, right, if that actually happened. I'd be skeptical just based on past experience. It's proved really, really hard for Congress to do its job that way. I will say I think the reconciliation bill will get through one way or the other because, one, Mike Johnson, you know, you got to give him credit. I think he's pretty good at this. But, two, he just has the backstop of Trump. And besides Thomas Massie, I think Trump can make anyone jump off any ledge at the moment.
Go get him. Rich Lowry, thanks so much. Pick up the National Review.
Thanks, Brent.
1-866-408-7669. I gave you a lot. I know you have a lot to say, whether it's Ukraine, what's happening with the president, with the market, which I still say it looks like the market is still up on these good news when it comes to inflation. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
If there's one way that Donald Trump could reset the global image of him, it's by being tough on Vladimir Putin. Something that many of us have wondered if he could ever do. If he does it, if he says, you have to do this, or, you know, we are going to take increasing steps to compel you to the table, that would be interesting.
And that is Dave Ignatius, very respected internationally, not the biggest Trump fan. I'm a fan of his, but you just got to know that when you're listening to him. But he's 100% right. I said, let's call his bluff. Call President Putin's bluff. So he says, yeah, Ukraine is the problem. Ancestrally, they belong to us. There is no country of Ukraine. They should have elections, whatever farcical statements he makes. But all the pressure was on Ukraine to see if you could get your ally to stop fighting and what are the circumstances that would do it. Well, it's done. They outlined it. It's pretty specific. You're not talking about what it's going to take for a permanent peace, but to get a ceasefire. And as was just texted over to me, as written up by Matt Chance, after an interview with Marco Rubio, the Kremlin so far is tight-lipped, but Steve Witkoff is going to be going over there with this deal. They've had a chance to read it. They've been tight-lipped about it so far, about what they're going to do. But they know now the pressure's on them. And if they look unreasonable and makes Trump look bad, you'll find out right away. And Dave, you'll get your answer. And I know the answer. If he starts saying this is I'm not stopping and I'm demanding elections and we want half the country, you can keep Kyiv and Lviv and that'll be about it. If you say things that are irrational, Trump's not going to give in because you're making him look. Not only is this a bad deal, but you're also making him look bad in front of his allies and his enemies because we got to do the same deal with. Got rid of the Houthi rebels. You got to come down on Iran. Looming in the background is North Korea. And then there's meetings in April with China. And you know, China says 2027, we're taking Taiwan. Maybe before. A lot of big decisions. And perception is everything. But if Putin does come across and says, yeah, I'll take it, take a ceasefire, and then you start negotiating, the big thing will be about security guarantees. Because Putin does stop fighting. But he reloads. And as you see, he's got a terrible fighting force, terrible army. But he's going to learn from that. Brian Kilmeade.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
All right, from 48th and 6th in Manhattan, Brian Kilmeade Show coming your way. Yes, this is the site just a few blocks away where Columbia University students and their crazy Hamas Palestinian supporters, anti-Semitic activists, were storming down, beating up cops, trying to break through, cause havoc in a tribute to the soon-to-be-deported, I hope, fingers crossed, graduate student who was detained for violating conditions of his green card and pledging allegiance to Hamas. And it looks like the Secretary of State found out that he is indeed a terror threat and said, we're going to revoke the green card. A judge has stepped in. Today, we will find out what that judge says. And if not, they're going to work it right up the ladder. And I believe this is going to be the beginning of a massive deportation of these ungrateful terrorist students who came here just to create havoc and forward their agenda, seemingly financed by Hamas, Islamic Jihad, and those terrorist groups themselves. This hour, we're going to be joined by Susan Crabtree, co-author of Fool's Gold, The Radicals, Con Artists, and Traitors Who Killed the California Dream and Now Threaten Us All. And after that, another California kid, Andrew Gruhl, chef and restaurant owner. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
Today, we made an offer that the Ukrainians have accepted, which is to enter into a ceasefire and into immediate negotiations to end this conflict in a way that's enduring and sustainable. We'll take this offer now to the Russians. The ball is now in their court.
Yup, let's call their bluff. Ukraine outlines ceasefire terms, signs mineral deal imminent, gets America weapons flowing again, satellite and intelligence flowing too. Trump and Putin scheduled to speak this week.
Number two.
Number one, it's a great product, as good as it gets. And number two, because this man has devoted his energy and his life to doing this. And I think he's been treated very unfairly by a very small group of people.
That is President Trump talking about Elon Musk in the crosshairs, not backing down despite Tesla charging stations, showrooms, and the cars themselves like Cybertrucks being targeted by people that do not like Trump or Musk.
Number one.
What President Trump is doing is insane. It shows there are no bounds around President Trump. And the other thing that's not talked about is what's going on within the administration in terms of how they're treating the Constitution and laws. I think all of that is bad for the attraction of capital.
Right. Steve Leisman of CNBC upset Donald Trump. My sense, never liked him, never voted for him. Keep an eye on the big picture. Trump economics team goal is to bring manufacturing and jobs back to America, lower income tax, and then make stuff here. Wild losses on Wall Street, but not today. They like the inflation report. So let's talk about what's happening in California. No, not that the governor's got a new podcast, and not just that the mayor was in Ghana when the city was burning to the ground and she lied about it and knew about it, that it's been a mess. And that is something that got into the came across the desk of Susan Crabtree, who co-authored the book Fool's Gold, The Radicals, Con Artists, and Traitors Who Killed the California Dream and Now Threaten Us All. Susan, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me, Brian.
Susan, when did you realize there was a plot that needed to be unwound here?
Well, I spent 23 years in Washington, D.C., cutting my teeth covering Congress and the White House during the Obama years. And in 2017, I came back to my native California, loved the state, grew up here in the 80s and 90s. And it was just everything that people thought it was. We were very proud of our state. A land of opportunity, just a big political balance. It was more purple back then, and certain areas were red. And now when I came back, it was very, very difficult to make it here. If you are in middle class or upper middle class, you have to be a moneyed elite because so many things are mismanaged and so many things are so expensive. I mean, it is like the California dream has become a fool's errand in our estimation. And it's sort of like a reverse gold rush. Everybody's leaving the state because they can't afford to be here. We have the highest taxes, highest utility rates, highest.
But it's all self-inflicted, right, Susan? Is that what you found out? It's not like, well, those poor guys don't have enough water. No, this is self-inflicted because they decided that the homeless should take over every city. They decided that green energy is the future. They decided to make oil and gas persona non grata. And what happens is they have no mass transportation, and they decide to be their political correctness has helped cave in the country.
That's absolutely correct. And we did a complete deep dive. It's even worse than that. We believe, and we've found evidence, it's right there, it was in public documents, that not only is Newsom, you know, you're very familiar with the fact that he cleaned up, he was able to clean up the homelessness in San Francisco, make it a shining city. When President Xi came to visit in the fall of 2023, but he can't do that, you know, when for our own citizens. We found we did a deep dive into Gavin Newsom's ties to the CCP. And what we found is that when he was mayor, he created this nonprofit called China SF to recruit Chinese business and investment into the Bay Area. And it streamlined a path for Chinese criminals and CCP officials to infiltrate California and buy up real estate, bribe government officials, pilfer intellectual property from American companies. And you know, so he cares more about sort of the Chinese, his ties to the Chinese. A lot of Chinese voters in San Francisco helped boost his early career. And all of this, it's been not even, nobody has even scratched the surface of what this involves. So it was all underwritten by Huawei, which, as you know, is not only banned in the United States for its surveillance of the Uyghurs and its spying capabilities, but it's banned in by the United Nations as well. So this China-SF joint venture with CCP cronies, it just exposes the Gavin Newsom's cozy relationship with China. Mm-hmm. And he was trying to get his wine into China at the same time. We saw that he trademarked two of his best wines so that they could be released in China. And so we wonder what the motivation for all of this is. He was actually, we found documents showing that he was pouring his wine at this building, this very she restaurant, housed in a building owned by Vincent Lo. Guess who Vincent Lo was? A partner with China SF. So we wonder, you know, what, there's also this, you know, he opened up for the land grabs. Interestingly enough, in 2022, the supermajority, the Democratic supermajority, because as you know, it's a one-party state, they passed a bill saying no more foreign ownership of California's agricultural land. But guess what? Gavin Newsom vetoed that bill, even though it was unanimously passed by Democratic. Yeah, Democratic supermajority.
So this is, he's got an agenda. He's bought and sold. We saw him over there already, right? Last 2 years ago?
Yes, he had these glamour shots that he was taking on the Great Wall with his sunglasses on and his shirt open. And he had actually had he paid a photographer with taxpayer dollars to accompany him on that trip. $100,000 in taxpayer dollars a year that pays for that photographer to, you know, take these glamour shots and the shots with him shaking hands with President Xi and rolling around with EV in electric vehicles that should be, that are Chinese owned. He went to a Chinese electric vehicle company that actually, it's the same company that sponsored some of the COVID PPE that he got from China, which is a completely bad deal that he can't try to keep secret from the California citizens. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so he's got all these ties to China. And as you know, I work with this book with Peter Schweitzer's group and my co-authors, Jed McFadder, his top researcher, and they just do an excellent job of delving into American politicians' ties to China. And this one was just, couldn't believe it. Nobody is doing this work in the legacy media in California.
It's amazing, too, is that now everything came to root when you saw how inept Karen Bass was. And then you have Gavin Newsom come down there and said, yeah, I want to find out what happened, why the water wasn't there, why we don't have enough firefighters, why everything burned to the ground, why this state doesn't have anybody insurers, any carriers. This is all self-inflicted. They had so many regulations that prevented them from raising rates to a place where they can actually have a business. They pulled out of the state, leaving very few carriers. Meanwhile, the state now and the federal government is expected to pay to rebuild these homes. And you chronicle that all in the Fool's Gold. But this is relatively new. This is taken from the newspapers. And Governor Gavin Newsom, at this time of strife, where they still wrestle with trying to rebuild their homes and get permits, he decides to start a podcast where he's talking to different conservatives. Here's his conversation with Michael Savage. They're debating California taxes in Florida's cut 10.
Gavin, I pay 16% in state taxes.
You need a better accountant because it's 13.3%.
But there's a millionaire's tax on top of it.
Well, there's,
and I'm 83 years old and I still work. I have another home in Florida.
Yeah.
I don't live there.
Right.
I prefer where I live. I've gotten used to the fog, to the seagulls, to the cormorants. I know all the birds of the bay. I'm an avid boater. But there's a point at which I will leave this state, that will be taxation without representation. I could go to Florida and pay no state tax.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is we have the highest tax rate, but not the highest taxes in America.
Who has a higher state tax?
Tax rate. Florida. They tax their low-wage workers more than we tax our high-wage
workers. I shouldn't be punished for succeeding.
But I think it's important, just in California, the vast majority of middle-class taxpayers pay less than they do in California, middle-class, than they do in states like Texas.
Well,
it's a question of who you're for. We have the highest.
How much, again, to what level
do
they pay low?
We are average to slightly above average taxed state.
That's not true. And he'll pull out Austin over in Texas and say that's Texas.
It's unbelievable to me. When you talk about the wildfires, the insurance companies are bolting the state, and they have been for years. But guess what? Gavin Newsom bailed out utility responsible for the most wildfires in the state and the deadliest. after collecting $700,000. Actually, he and his wife collected it from PG&E. And what people don't understand is that they see him, you know, trying to investigate all these things about the wildfires, acting like he cares. You know, what you need to know about Gavin Newsom is he is all—it's just all performative. Nothing is performative.
Nothing's real. And what about what about Kamala Harris? What should we know about her?
Well, there's interesting. We have so much about Kamala Harris in the book. We had to cut so much of it when she lost the election. But here she is trying to run for governor again, signaling that she is. And it's definitely scaring a lot of the citizens of California. What we found, one of the most outrageous things we found, is she likes to talk about how she is so close and advocates for the LGBTQ plus community. But we found an instance in which there was a convicted pedophile who was accused of, actually convicted of it, it's just a really disgusting case. And he broke his parole, this individual, and I talked to the parole officer who rearrested him, and there was a clear confession from this individual that he was going into the San Francisco gay community and some closeted gays, he told the officer, to spread HIV because he was HIV positive, to spread AIDS. And this parole officer asked Kamala Harris to prosecute this guy and say, you know, he's a convicted pedophile. He's doing this in your city. She was district attorney at the time, and her office refused to do so. That's just the tip of the iceberg. We found so many deeply concerning things. You have to buy the book to really get into it.
How about a couple of things on Nancy Pelosi?
Well, Nancy Pelosi, we didn't spend as much time on her because she's an old guard, but we do talk about all of her ties and how she helped Gavin Newsom come up in the world, because, you know, she is his aunt by marriage. And her husband, Paul Pelosi's father, actually did a whole business deal in Lake Tahoe for Squaw Valley. Now it's called, you can't call it Squaw Valley now. It's Tahoe Palisades, I believe it is. but she did a whole deal with Gavin Newsom's grandfather. This is the kind of moneyed and political ties, because he didn't earn anything himself. Well, everything about Gavin Newsom has been handed to him on a silver platter.
Adam Schiff,
we talk about his ties to the Armenian gangsters and mobsters. In Los Angeles, Armenians are one of the top political contingencies that you have to cater to. And Adam Schiff has gone out of his way to help stand up some of their political action committees. And then they were found guilty of embezzling some of the money from those political action committees. And a lot of them have gone to jail. And Adam Schiff has direct ties to those individuals.
Susan Crabtree, our guest. And Susan, the state is overrun by illegal immigrants. It's overrun by homelessness. It is extremely high taxed. Their natural resources have not been utilized. When they do get rains, they have no way to retain them. There's been nothing done to bolster up their infrastructure. And crime is run rampant. These are all self-inflicted things that they have done through their policies, and there's no Republican to push back. Have we gotten to a breaking point for the average Californian?
Well, I like to say that Californians have to learn the hard way. There's been a lot of immigration into California, and the policies that were flourishing in the 60s, the sort of what Miranda Devine, who has endorsed the book, it's called The Woke Mind Virus, has bubbled up from the 60s, coming from in San Francisco, then down throughout the whole state. So now, but there are some signs, because you had Exhibit A, the wildfires, Los Angeles, I think, is starting to change. And last year, because of the crime wave across the state, Proposition 36 that reversed the stopped on crime policies that led to all the smash and grabs, that passed, and both San Francisco and Los Angeles kicked out their prosecutors, one of them, George Gascon, who wrote that week on crime law that allowed the felonies to go to misdemeanors and if you didn't steal more than $950. So there was a resounding victory across the state for Proposition 36. So it is
some signs.
Things are changing.
Yes, hopefully.
Some rightward shifting, but we need a tectonic shift in my estimation.
I would just love to see Adam Gavin Newsom's career just close out. Let him do podcasts. He should not be leading anything. Susan Crabtree, thanks so much. Pick up Fool's Gold. Thanks so much, Susan.
I really appreciate your interest in this.
Absolutely.
It's really critical for California yep. and the rest of the country.
And a lot of times they say it happens in California first and then it spreads to the country. Let's hope that's not the case. Don't move. Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
We're less than 2 months into his administration. And, you know, there's so much kinds of hyperventilating. And that it's like at some point, you know, 48 months and we're not even in the two. What, you know, so for me, it's like we need to find a way to get through that. And I'm not dumb. I know that there's a lot of people want to yell or to a lot of performative kinds of thing. But I'm that guy.
He's not. Senator Fetterman might even vote, they say, for the continuing resolution that'll be on his desk this Friday. And they'll do another budget this summer for next year. And maybe things will go back to law and order. But Fetterman is not freaking out about Donald Trump. Went over to Mar-a-Lago famously. Question is there anybody else like him on the left? Is there anybody else that will step up? I mean, Senator Mark Kelly said, you know, you need 7, maybe 8 if Rand Paul doesn't vote for it. But you got to wonder who else would step up on that side, because Schumer can't walk around and say Republicans are in control when he knows every Republican vote for it, it would not be enough. People will figure that out. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show. Andrew Gruhl is next. Don't move.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Let's welcome tonight's guest. When he cooks outside, he's a public master baster, Chef Andrew Gruhl.
And that's a better introduction than I would have given. Much different. That was Andrew Gruhl's introduction last night on a show called Gutfeld, named after him. Very successful late night show. Andrew goes on all the time. He'll take the 3,000-mile journey from his home in California and come out here. Andrew, great to see you.
Thanks for having me back. Appreciate it.
So how up to date are you on what's going on? Do you just wait to get booked and then you decide, or are you all over the news period while running your restaurants?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of, they book it a little ways out, so I know when I'm coming out, and then I can plan other shows and get some work done out here, right, et cetera.
But you're up to date on what's going on in the news? You're following everything.
I'm a geek. I'm on it, you know, before it happens. I predict it.
So last time you were here, you were talking about the devastating fires, which your restaurant was asked to do, how you're delivering food because the city couldn't. Where are we at now?
Well, now it's the cleanup, right? So now we're in what I call phase 4. Remember, phase 1 was when the citizens have to step up. Phase 2 is when the government doesn't know what's going on. Phase 3, they step up and say they're doing X, Y, and Z. And then phase 4 is when they don't do all the things they talked about in phase 3. So remember, they were going to have all this money and they were going to make it so that it was much easier for everybody to clean up, and they were going to cut the regulations and they were going to grow quickly. And now it's all about the rumor mill. Nobody's been able to get in and clean their homes up. The only people who have been able to are those with a ton of money, because they're hiring private contractors. But then the city is now regulating so that even those private contractors can't get in and clean.
What's their goal? To not have as many homes?
You know, I don't know what their goal is. I mean, the pessimistic side of me is saying their goal is that they want to redevelop under a new framework where it's this utopian vision of like high density housing, a lot of low income housing in areas which otherwise would have been, big money. Altadena is one fire, right? And that's a more low-income community, and they're just being completely forgotten about. And then you have Malibu and the Palisades, where you have a lot of the high-income people that have mansions out there that were destroyed. And now it's a matter of who's getting more attention. Obviously, Altadena is being ignored, and all those people are still living out on the streets or, you know, have moved elsewhere, but the schools don't have any place to operate. The kids are left kind of destitute. So it's a real sad situation. The Dream Center in Los Angeles is doing a lot to provide shelter and supplies for those kids. But as for the way in which they're kind of redoing the zoning, if you will, you're seeing a lot of executive moves to come in and say, hey, it's going to look exactly like this. And now the new thing, too, that came out a couple weeks ago or even a week ago, I can't even tell with time anymore, is that you are not allowed to hire private firefighters anymore in the city of Los Angeles.
Because Rick Caruso was able to save his facilities?
Yep. Yeah, yeah. Rick Caruso saved pretty much his entire area up in the Palisades by utilizing a lot of this private fire force. He knew what was going to happen. He knew the city had been cutting and they were dropping, and he wanted to make sure that he was prepared. Because recall, we knew about this 4 or 5 days before it happened, which is why, once again, everybody talks about how Bass left town, even though... Mayor Karen Bass left town. And she says, oh, well, I didn't know what was going to happen. I knew. Right. Like the funny thing is, it actually was in the news as deadly fires could be coming. It wasn't just, hey, there's a high wind event. So Rick Caruso, who, you know, just
barely lost to Bass.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You know, L.A. developer, very, very high net worth, owns a lot of real estate. And he did. Yeah, he lost the mayoral race in Los Angeles. So he hires a private fire department, if you will, a private fire force, and he protects his area of the Palisades. You can actually see it didn't get destroyed. None of it did. And now they're passing legislation that says you are no longer allowed to have your own private fire force.
How crazy is that?
It's nuts.
I mean, to me, that is it is just offensive to hear that a guy actually took action with his own money and thought ahead of time, and now he's being punished. Mayor Bass, and people might not think this is a big deal, I think it's a huge deal, because she's emblematic of somebody totally unqualified for that job, only got it because she was a woman, black, who was going to run for mayor, even though she did nothing as a congresswoman, zero charisma, no ability to command an audience, no experience running anything. So she's really done nothing. And then all of a sudden she decides to go to Ghana. And she said, well, no one ever told me. Well, now they find emails going back and forth that they told her exactly what to do. And they told her how bad it was going to be. And she still left. So her answer is fire the fire chief.
And she also had text messages, which really indicted her. And she deleted all of these text messages. And that was revealed in some of the emails and the other communication. And what's crazy about that is that all
so
the news...
So knowing that she's guilty, I got to delete these.
Of course, I had to delete them. But what's crazy is like ABC7, Los Angeles, all these local news stations, the way in which they've been covering it the past couple of days, you ready for this? She forgot to save her text messages. You don't save text messages. Come on. I mean, the wording here is just unbelievable. But that's why they're doing all this stuff. You know, you look at the Fire Force piece and you say, it's so in your face. Couldn't they have sugarcoated it a little bit? But no, because they don't care, because they know that they've got the media and the propaganda supporting them, especially in California. And then obviously they're stitched in by way of the bureaucracy underneath her. She feels as if she's insulated. And the scary part is she very well could be.
See, didn't some of those people lose their homes? Don't they know ineptness when they see it? Do they stand for anything? Do they see the lack of expediency when it comes to getting everything done, cutting regulations, and moving forward on the rebuild?
Well, one would think that life takes over and politics takes a back seat, but in California especially, politics is always front and center. I mean, it's driving the bus. It's not even the navigator.
So are you thinking there's going to be a recall? There is a recall right
now.
There
is a recall. There's a recall. They're pushing it.
For the mayor and governor.
They're two totally separate recalls. There's a recall against Newsom. I don't know the details on that, if it's been picking up the steam. It's the recall on – and the reason why the recall on Newsom is, you know, questionable is that Newsom's termed out basically in a year, right? So, you know, you recall him. You got to push through that effort.
Plus a ton of money.
Ton of money, right? Because – and – I don't want to get into the granular detail there, but yes, going to cost money, but it's also going to give Newsom the ability to, if he's being recalled, then he can raise an unlimited amount of funds, which then he can use that war chest ultimately to campaign on.
Because he's term limited out.
Yeah.
So do you think the Bass thing has a shot of recalling her?
I think the Bass thing definitely has a shot, because I don't think that she had the fanfare before this. So she could be another scapegoat here. So they need another scapegoat. So previously it was, you know, Monica Crowley, the fire chief, right? She was the scapegoat, Bass's scapegoat. So now the question is the bigger brass going to look and say, okay, well, maybe Bass, although they're one and the same to some degree philosophy-wise, is Bass going to be the scapegoat, and let's just let the recall happen so that we can keep the entrenched bureaucracy in place, i.e., city council and in all of these kind of nonprofits. You know, the stuff we're seeing with Doge and the USAID stuff and all of this money being kind of laundered around these NGOs, that happens on a local level in California and Los Angeles as well.
So we have Steve Hilton, looks like he's positioning to run as a Republican. Maybe Jake Steinfeld's going to run, guy you're not familiar with, but pretty well known in the area. He was the fitness head of the Council of Fitness in California under Schwarzenegger. They're best friends. They came up as bodybuilders together during the heyday. So he might be able to help him. I'm very curious to see if something's going to emerge. Somebody more moderate will emerge. Will Rick Caruso try to emerge? Because he's getting so much national attention now.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Rick Caruso is going to emerge. You know, people are talking about, obviously, Rick Grinnell. That'll be interesting. I mean, I saw a poll yesterday. Grinnell was up like 35% to everybody else's 15 or 16.
Would he run as a Republican, though? How could that be? You mean in the primary?
Rick Grinnell?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Run as a Republican.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. And I think that, well, once again, I'm just, you know, I'm just spreading rumors that I've already read. So I don't know. I haven't spoken to Rick, although great guy. He'd been down to the restaurant before. And then Chad Bianco, right? So the Riverside County Sheriff, although he's getting a lot of pushback from the kind of more hardcore right because he was a BLM kneeler. He was always kneeling in a protest. So people are kind of bringing that up, and they're like, look, you know, we don't know if we can support
you. Even in California, they wouldn't still kneel today. So you said you're a little, and I don't blame you. I never thought about it this way. You're a little resentful of the fact that Gavin Newsom's trying to rehab his image and interview all these Republicans and act like a moderate because he thinks that might be the pathway to a national platform.
Yeah, well, Newsom's doing this, number one, because he's practicing for the 2028 run. So what better than debate prep on the spot in a podcast setting for 2 or 3 hours. I mean, you know, it's so funny. I was thinking the other day, right? We always hear about like, you know, and that was more Kamala Harris, but even Trump did this, taking a couple of days off to get ready for the debates, the debate prep, et cetera. That's a big deal when it comes to the presidential elections. He's doing this in live fire every single day, live bait, when he's got, you know, Steve Bannon coming on and he was on with Charlie Kirk. And
he was had Steve Bannon on?
He's got Steve Bannon coming on this next episode. I mean, that's crazy. So we're giving him this platform, and now he's coming out, especially in California, as this major moderate. And I think the reason why that's important is that in so much as us and, you know, who know the news and the political stuff, we look at Newsom, we're like, oh, my gosh, he's crazy. You know, he's a chameleon. He's two-faced, et cetera. A lot of the low-propensity voters, they don't know much about Newsom. They don't follow politics like some of us do. So they just see this guy. He speaks really well. He's kind of a pretty boy. And he comes out as this moderate who really wants to bring all the voices together.
What is he really like?
Newsom is – he will do whatever it takes to make himself number one. He doesn't have a principled bone in his body. I always say Bernie Sanders, I disagree with almost everything he says, but I like the fact that he's principled. I'm not saying I support Bernie Sanders, but you know what you're getting with Bernie Sanders. You're going to get the same speech. You're going to get the same position every single time. With Newsom, you never know what you're going to get because he's going to say whatever it takes to move himself forward in that moment in time, and he's good at it. The guy is good. The guy can talk his way out of anything. He's slick. He's smart, and he's definitely a force to be reckoned with.
Well, yeah, we'll see what's going to happen. We know he loves the Hollywood community. Yep. Also, he's effectively pushed Hollywood out. You can't afford to do a movie in Los Angeles. The studios are virtually empty because all the fees, all the unions, all the regulations, all the political correctness that gets you maybe qualifies you for the Oscars, that's also how you have to staff any movie.
Well, and it's the secondary economy, right? So it's the restaurants, it's the caterers, it's the people who are supporting the initial kind of business or business economy of Hollywood. All those people are out too. I mean, I get pitched like every day, and they know that I'm on Fox all the time, and I get pitched by the Hollywood elites, and they're like, oh, will you come and feed this event for 1,000 people, or we need this for gift bags. Nobody's willing to do it. They're going down, and they're actually scraping for the conservatives or the libertarians to try and get them to do it because there's nobody left to
Well, are you donating?
No.
Oh,
so to Hollywood? No, I don't do any of
okay.
That.
They're hiring you.
No, they're asking to hire/donate. These guys don't pay for anything. But the point of me telling that story is that it's emblematic that now they've got nobody. They're even talking to me.
Right, right. So listen, Andrew Grew's going to stick around. This week was the week where RFK Jr. actually sat down with these leading food manufacturers and told them the new rules. I want to get Andrew's take as an experienced and active entrepreneur and chef. Andrew Grew in just a moment. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Breaking news. The latest headlines. Exciting commentary.
People are aroused. I haven't seen people so aroused in a very, very long time.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
People should be able to make their own choices. If you want to eat a donut or seed oils, you should be able to. You should be able to exercise informed choice. You should know what that product is, what's in your food, and what the health impacts are. And that's all we're going to do. We're going to incentivize companies to be transparent
and we're going to inform Americans about what's making them sick. Nobody wants to be sick.
They have prediabetes.
I didn't order that.
So there you go. RFK Jr. sitting down talking about what this week would bring. And he's trying to try with the FDA to straighten out what's in our foods, get some of those chemicals out, and get people to these restaurants, like the one they were in. I don't know which restaurant it was, to fry their fries in beef tallow, which, even though it sounds like it's worse, is actually better. With me still is Andrew Gruhl, chef and restaurant owner. Your thoughts about what RFK's doing, and why is beef tallow better?
Well, it's all about the omega-6s, right? So seed oils, first of all, are commercially and industrially processed, and they've got a lot of chemicals in them in order to get the oil out of it, right? So it's a byproduct. I mean, okay. It really is like engine oil. But it's very, very high on omega-6 fatty acids, and it's that imbalance of omega-6 fatty acids to omega-3 fatty acids in our diet that's leading to a lot of inflammation and hypertension and diabetes and, you know, all these various the chronic diseases. And once again, so our 6-to-3 ratio like 100 years ago was 2-to-1. Our 6-to-3 ratio now is like 20-to-1 in our diet because there's omega-6s in everything, right? It's the processed carbs and sugars, et cetera. That's what leads. That's the foundation of all this inflammation inside of our bodies, which leads to all these other problems. Now, we find it in all these seed oils. So the idea is that you can be eating much healthier fats, you know, real sat, you know, and I know it sounds crazy. You're like saturated fats. There was a war on saturated fats in the 80s and the 90s, but all of that research has come out, and it turns out, I mean, it was all propaganda, right? The American Heart Association, which was funded by Bayer and all these different big companies and the sugar companies that were trying to promote utilizing trans fats and margarine and seed oils because it's cheaper, turns out not as good for you. So beef tallow is a great alternative in a setting like restaurants where you can actually cut back on that, and you can have, I mean, fat's fat, right? So you don't want to have too much of it. It's not like it's like eating an apple, but it's much better than the sixes.
So you say, you just told me that log on, I did to Seed Oil Scout. It's an app.
Yeah.
To find out if that restaurant you're going to, wherever you are, what do they fry in?
So you find out what they're from. And most of the time, a lot of these restaurants are now are using beef tallow, avocado oil. Zero Acre Oil is a new one. It's like a fermented sugar cane, which is very low on the linoleic scale, right, because it's that linoleic acid. And that's also a really great product they put a lot of research into. And then, obviously, butter, duck fat. You know, we use butter, duck fat, tallow, chicken fat, bacon fat. We render our own beef tallow as well. So, you know, we haven't been using – oh, extra virgin olive oils. Those are all the healthier fats.
So he said, this week he met with General Mills and others. And he's telling them, you got to take some of these – all these chemicals out, and it's got to happen right away. And then people have warned that there's lobbying companies that are going to go – lobbying firms that are going to go in there and make sure – that they delay this for 4 years until they get somebody else in there that will forget about it. Is that a concern you have?
Well, my concern – I have two concerns, funny enough, right? On the one side, I'm very, very concerned about all the chemicals and the additives in the foods, right? And I've been very conscious about making sure that we don't serve that to our guests and I don't serve it to my family, kids, et cetera, and try and be very aware of that. That comes down to labeling. We as consumers have the agency to be able to pick and choose what we want, right?
As long as we know,
right? So that's the transparency in labeling that I think RFK can push through. On the other side, I do get concerned about mandates and bans because I think that the pendulum is ultimately going to swing the other way. We know that's the life. That's politics, the life of politics. And who knows what the other side bans next? How do we know they don't ban meat in favor of bugs, right? Like, we got to be very careful about using the government as a hammer in order to mandate things. I think we need the free market to allow this. Now, the real gorilla in the room, or the triple cheeseburger in the room, is it's the subsidies, right? Like, the reason that there's all that junk in the foods is because we put so much money towards kind of corn and soy and wheat and all of these commodity products that are subsidized, and we use the byproducts and all the junk food and the highly processed foods. $125 billion from 1995 to 2020 in those subsidies creating these byproducts.
Unbelievable. So the odd of it is, people have explained to me, is that if I can let my food last longer, I make more money. And if I have a huge country, I got to ship my food all over the place. So I got from Oregon to Florida. So how do I do that? Well, let's see. If I can put this chemical in, it'll stay fresher longer. I'll save more money and be able to ship it around, and helps everybody. It leaves you, you can keep it in your closet a little bit longer. But they don't think about the health risks. And they do this self-reporting situation where they do their own studies to see how dangerous these new chemicals are. And they decide if it's good or not.
Yeah, well, that's and what you're referring to on those studies is GRAS, right? So GRAS, which is the generally recognized as safe loophole in food processing. So basically, you can create your own study and say, oh, well, we did this study and we recognized that it was safe. Well, I mean, it's self-interest right there. So RFK is trying to close that loophole for the GRAS or GRAS, and that's an important
piece. Will that help?
That'll help a lot because now we'll actually have the research out there and we can determine which ones aren't safe and which ones are safe. And it is – see, I don't think that it's all about the preservatives or the preservation. I think it's under the guise of preservation. It's just about keeping food cheap.
Right.
It's about cheap food.
And sugar's tasty. And I like more of it if you give it to me. Andrew Gruhl, always educational, always insightful. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Now hop on that 3,000-mile journey home.
Yeah.
Brian Kilmeade Show. Keep it here.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. Martha McCallum standing by in about 20 minutes. Jackie DeAngelis is here, co-host of the Big Money Show on FBN. We're watching this market go up and down, too. We're watching a court case that has a lot to do with how many people are going to be deported here. Thanks to the State Department's investigation of this guy, Mahmoud Khalil. He is a Columbia University graduate student who graduated, by the way, still causing unrest in his pro-Hamas, pro-Palestinian protest that's taking over buildings still at Barnard, the sister school of Columbia. And because of some of his actions that he led, it's cost Columbia $400 million and maybe billions more. And maybe this is just the first. I hope so. And I just hope some liberal judge doesn't say it's no big deal to violate your green card status. Jackie DeAngelis, I know you're getting set to host your show within just about an hour from now.
Yeah.
So the market suddenly went negative, now down 350 points. What happened?
All right, we started on a positive note because we've had a couple of down days in a row triggered by nervousness about the tariffs. Mm-hmm. Then we get the news last night that maybe there's a deal to be made with Canada. They're going to back off. We're going to back off. They're going to have a conversation. That's how you want to see these tariff negotiations go. We get CPI this morning, which was fell, actually. It was at 2.8%, which was a positive thing. That's inflation is going down. Oil prices are down. Food prices are down. Those egg prices are down. So we're seeing things move in the right direction. And then so that's why the market was up this morning. And then you get this news that Canada says they are going to announce new trade duties on $21 billion of U.S. goods. And the market got spooked by that because they said, well, we were hoping that there would be some sort of negotiation here, and it doesn't seem to be playing out. This is what I would say. The market's got a brace for this kind of volatility because that's how Trump negotiates and that's how these deals get done. They're not going to get done in the snap of, you know, fingers overnight.
Behind closed doors.
Exactly.
It's always in front.
And, you know, ultimately, I think what's going to happen is we'll see all the policies start to come together. Growth start to come back to this economy. Revenues coming in from some of these tariffs when they're finally negotiated and implemented, manufacturing coming home, more people employed. But again, this will take time. And as I was saying to you in the break, algorithmic trading induces some of this selling. So you hit some of these levels and then the selling continues.
Right. It's not necessarily a human being.
Right.
So the other thing I mentioned to you before, is this a buying opportunity?
Absolutely.
Because nothing really happened. These tariffs are coming. You know, we don't know if they're going to be pulled back, but the companies are still the companies.
Absolutely. And I'm not going to say today is the day to necessarily buy. There could be more of this market that washes out. We had Kenny Polcari on yesterday, and he said, you know, we can get into that correction territory or even below. But Brian, that's actually healthy for this market. It's an S&P 500 up well over 20% for the last 2 years. As we know, students of the markets that look at the last 30 years know markets don't go in a straight line up forever. So if you are looking to get in, if you were looking at Bitcoin at 100,000, it's much more attractive where it's trading now. If you were looking at Nvidia when it hit 144, it's much more attractive now. So definitely, if there are things on the radar, watch them and think about buying.
So, yeah. So between Canada and the U.S., what about what Europe did yesterday? 25% tariffs on goods like motorcycles and whiskey, bourbon, right. And bourbon, whiskey, whatever. So they picked out some products. Where's that going?
So Europe's playing hardball. That's the way I see this negotiation right now. But that doesn't mean that they won't fold. The way Trump and Lutnick are approaching this is understanding that actually America's in the stronger position. It's going to hurt these other countries far more than it's going to hurt us. And so basically it's a little bit of a game of chicken. And that's why the market's so nervous.
Game of ego too, right?
And ego. You've got to, you know what they always tell me? Trust the process. You got to trust the process. Mm-hmm. More than 75 million people voted for Donald Trump. He told you he was going to do this kind of thing. Now we have to trust the process.
Here's Howard Lutnick, the Commerce Secretary. Cut four.
When you're negotiating with someone and they're not paying attention and they're disagreeing, the president, who's the best deal maker ever to sit in that chair, is going to say, here's my response. And then all of a sudden, shockingly, they respond.
Yeah, well, he is the best dealmaker, number one. But number two, they're also used to Sleepy Joe Biden, who didn't even know that he signed an executive order to ban natural gas exports. So they're used to an America that rolls over, with leaders that roll over, that don't come to the negotiating table and play hardball. You've got a different leader CEO in the chair right now.
I think that's no question about it. Now, in terms of the critics, this guy Steve Leisman on CNBC, he went off, and I hear his politics in all of his business statements. Cut five.
I'm going to say this at risk of my job, Kelly, but what President Trump is doing is insane. It is absolutely insane. It is about the eighth reason we've had for the tariffs, and now he's saying he's putting 50% tariffs on Canada unless they agree to become the 51st state. That is insane. There is just no other way of describing it. And the trouble, Kelly, is that it shows there are no bounds around President Trump. This is very different from the first administration, where there were people around him who seemed to, I don't know what the word is, but smooth over some of the edges now. And the other thing that's not talked about, Kelly, is what's going on within the administration in terms of how they're treating the Constitution and laws. I think all of that is bad for the attraction of capital.
Your thoughts about his thoughts.
So I know Steve for a long time because I used to work at that aforementioned network. And I know what his politics are. And he's speaking from a place of emotion. First of all, yesterday with all the tariff news and Trump, you know, proposing that 50% tariff, I never heard any conversation other than joking conversation about Canada becoming the 51st state. There was no threat in that regard to my knowledge. So that's number one. But number two, with respect to the Constitution, I'm also a lawyer, Brian. We're actually following the Constitution and the rules properly now, which we weren't. And the previous administration was, you know, basically ripped it up and threw it out the window the way Nancy Pelosi ripped up Trump's State of the Union speech that night. So, you know, people are going to look at this from their perspective, whatever their perspective is. If you turn on Morning Joe and Joe Scarborough, you hear them saying things that are factually inaccurate as well. That's spin. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I expect most viewers to do their homework, understand what's happening a little bit better, and then make an informed decision.
So do you think that a lot of people, you know, you said that before that you would prefer the president get his tax cuts done, get that big, beautiful bill signed.
Yeah.
That would be probably late spring, summer.
Right.
So, and then go ahead with the tariffs. But the president said, no, we're starting. Would you just like to see across the board reciprocal? So if India is going to charge us 50% for cars, we're going to charge whatever India makes, or if they don't have the product, we'll start doing that. And then theoretically, it goes down.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair when
that's
you think about
April.
It. Nobody understood before President Trump how much we were being charged by these other countries. So what's wrong with a reciprocal tariff? What's good for you is good for me. And ultimately, like I said, it's going to hurt them more than it's going to hurt us. So they're going to say, we're going to lower ours, and then we're going to play a game where we go down from there.
All right. So you see that way. So Charles Gasparino says, look, this is just a little bit of pain. Look at the big picture. Mm-hmm. Because what the president's trying to do is bring manufacturing back and shrink the federal working force. Cut seven.
The market's not factoring in the good stuff that Trump's doing, which is cutting taxes, cutting deregulation, weaning the economy, the private economy off government is a huge thing. It's going to take a little pain. Think of reverse Keynesian economics. Instead of spending your way into into positive job growth, you're cutting and you're trying to get the private economy to do that, because if you allow the government to do that, we're going to get a lot of debt, and then you definitely have fiscal Armageddon.
I mean, I think he's absolutely right. And that's why I say Trump's policies are a wheel with maybe 10 different spokes, and they all have to operate together for you to see the big picture and the final product of what's going to happen here. This tariff aspect is just one small piece of it. If there is even a little inflation as a result of these tariffs, whatever they end up being, and that's debatable, the tax cuts, the growth that we see in this country is going to make up for it. It's going to offset it. You can already see that in the CPI report today. So that's all good news.
And CPI stands for, that's how we judge where the inflation's at?
What the rate is, right? How fast prices are going up right now. 2.8% is
instead
much lower.
Instead of 3%.
Right. Is much lower than we've seen it in quite some time. So he's already brought it down. He's only been in office a couple months.
And he says, you know, we want the trend.
Right.
We want the trend. Now, people talk about, you know, if the economy slows down, that could be good news for the interest rates.
Yes.
So maybe that's, you don't want to slow the economy in theory, but the president wants the housing market to start moving again.
Right.
Doesn't he need that to come down?
He needs interest rates to come down for sure.
Is that the only way to get him down?
Well, he's not going to slow the economy. I mean, listen, he was handed a slowing economy. Economy is different than stock market. The reason the stock market went up the last 4 years gangbusters the way it did was because people were chasing yield because inflation was so high under Biden. So it was like if you didn't have your money in the stock market, you were getting eroded. Even in a bank, it was like stuffing it under the mattress and having it rot. So everybody flocked to the stock market and stocks went up. But that's not necessarily because the economy was so great. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to, you know, we'll see a little slowing potentially as a result of what's happening right now before the growth boom comes in the future. And that could give you a short-term decline in rates.
So, Jackie, who do you have on your show? Or what's going to be your lead on your show? Well, you're riding the tariffs.
Yeah, we're talking about all this, and we've got Larry Kudlow on the first hour. You want anybody who's, you know, seen more of this in practice and watched it played out and also made policy, he's your guy. So we're going to be talking to him and picking his brain.
I want to talk about, just before we let you go, on Elon Musk. President United, I love what the president did yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, just brings out the Teslas. You got to be kidding me. I'm not asking you to buy a Yugo.
Right.
I'm asking you to buy the number one electric car that a American, naturalized American has made, engineered. If you want to read how Tesla came to be, it's all in Walter Isaacson's book.
Mm-hmm.
It was the hardest process, period. They're going overseas to change the body and the perception of what an electric car is. And he was relentless in making people feel cool behind the wheel for a change. Not a go-kart anymore. He engineers it, makes it affordable, and of course, he's got the Cybertruck too. And now they're attacking the power stations. The seven Cybertrucks have been blown up. They're attacking the showrooms here in New York City and in Boston, and I imagine other places around the country. Is this and we're watching the stock really suffer and sales go down in Europe. How do you overcome this?
I'm not sure how you overcome it, but what it is an attack on Elon Musk because he's helping the president and he's working with the Doge Department. This is what the left does. The same way Biden and his team weaponized the Justice Department to go after Trump in court to effectively try to either put him behind bars or keep him from running for president, they're going after Elon Musk in a different way. They understand that his company, his legacy is at stake here, and they're trying to take him down. But you know what's amazing to me, Brian? The hypocrisy on the left. Because a year ago or 2 years ago before Musk had united with Donald Trump and said he was going to be part of this team. They loved Elon Musk. They loved Teslas. They spent hundreds of billions of dollars on green energy policy that effectively is sinking this country right now because it didn't work out with respect to infrastructure and everything else. So now all of a sudden, when they thought Tesla was the coolest thing in the world and EVs were everything, now all of a sudden you got to back away from it. People need to look at that and really understand what's happening here.
So Musk announced yesterday that Tesla will double vehicle output in the U.S. within the next 2 years. He also said, here's $100 million to make sure the midterms go well.
Right.
So that fractured relationship that all business experts who knew Musk and knew Trump said, these guys are going to break up, egos are going to clash.
No.
What do you say?
He's a patriot. Not only is Trump a patriot, but so is Elon Musk. It started with the $47 billion that he bought Twitter for to save free speech. And now he is doing all the Doge stuff despite the criticism. He's taken the hits where they come. He is putting his money where his mouth is. He is not a hypocrite. He's standing up for what's right and what he believes
in. Have ad sales come back on Twitter, on X?
I am not sure about that specifically, so I'm not going to comment.
Well, I would say this has X looking like a better purchase than it did originally.
Oh, absolutely, because more people are back on it and more people are using it. The reason I'm not commenting on the ad sales without having the actual figures is because you've got a lot of these sort of left-leaning companies that would be the ad dollars, so I don't necessarily know what their spend is, but perception is that Twitter is a better company from the public.
And this is why I ask it. Obviously, if it was the same thing, the people that are blowing up his Teslas aren't on Twitter. However, Jeff Bezos and Amazon, it seems as though he is a huge fan of the president.
It's coming around.
Zuckerberg on Facebook,
coming
a huge
around.
Fan of the president. I'm looking at Goldman Sachs CEO. Yep. So I from the big corporations, you might have people out there with purple hair and nose rings who have a problem with the president. But the titans of industry no longer, and therefore Musk could be reflected in that.
Absolutely. And listen, at the end of the day, everybody, you know, it comes down to the bottom line, profits and money. And it did not work out supporting the Biden administration, suppressing free speech. Look at Mark Zuckerberg. I mean, they were the main proponent for the suppressing the Hunter Biden laptop story. All of a sudden now he shows up at an inauguration and he's Trump's best friend. Personally, character-wise, I think he's a total fraud. But at the end of the day, if the outcome is positive, I guess I have to take it.
Okay, I'm gullible. I actually think the guy transformed.
You think so?
I think the UFC stuff. I think that's his – he finally feels cool for the first time in his life.
Okay.
And I don't think he wants to go back. I don't think he has to.
We'll see.
And the word is he is still consistently in touch with Trump.
Okay. Well, I'm like a leopard doesn't change their spots, girl, but, you know.
Well, we both could be right.
Right.
He could change a little, and at the same time, he could be very practical.
Maybe he learned his lesson.
Right. I just do know this. Everyone left Trump's business council after Charlottesville.
Yeah.
And we know that was all a lie.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that he said there weren't good people. There were good people on both sides, meaning there were some people that wanted the Confederate statues up, not white supremacists.
Right.
You played the soundbite. All those guys left that day. They said, okay, we're going to. I think it's going to take a lot more to push him away from Trump right now for four years. It's
going
to take
a lot
more than some misperceived story.
Absolutely. I agree with you on that.
All right, Jackie, I can't wait to see your show.
Thank you.
2 hours, the Big Money Show begins at 12 until noon on FBN. Back in a moment.
Okay.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I don't know if she would actually say it on mic, but I know she thinks it. Martha McCallum says this is the highlight of her week. Yeah, she's got kids and she goes on vacation and she's got summer homes and her own show.
Boy.
And she's got election coverage. But Martha McCallum, anchor of the story, is here today. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but is it true?
You know what? I'll say this. I always look forward to being here with you, Brian.
Politically correct.
On Wednesdays. In fact, I thought today when I looked at my schedule, it looked like it had dropped off. And I was like, did Brian cancel me?
How dare you?
No, Brian didn't cancel you.
Do you know Martha McCallum?
Oh, good. Yeah, right. Exactly.
How dare you? So Martha, can I tap into your business background? What is your take on why the market's suffering right now? Is it the tariffs?
Yeah,
here's
what I think about this. And I think that the White House needs to articulate this really well. I'm hoping we're going to have Howard Lutnick on today to talk a little bit more about this. There is clearly short-term pain, especially for medium-size and smaller-size businesses who need to buy some of their stuff from these other countries in order to make their product. So what I think the White House should do is come out to these businesses and offer them tax cuts, depreciation on new equipment, you know, some real incentives to help balance out the pain that they're feeling when they buy certain things from other countries in order to build their product, because they're really feeling this. Okay.
Right.
I also think that the stock market pain is short term. These are corrections that need to happen in the U.S. market. And I think Lutnick's exactly right. He talked to Stuart Varney earlier today, and he was talking about the fact that we need to bring this production back home. For national security reasons, we need to be able to have technology, semiconductor chips, steel, to the extent that we really need that here as well. I'd love for them to also start talking about pharmaceuticals and bringing those back home.
Can you believe we haven't done that yet?
No, I mean, hello. So I think that's what needs to be encouraged. People need to say, look, the market is having some gyrations. This is not unheard of. I mean, I think about when I started covering the markets, Brian, for CNBC years ago, we were so excited when the Dow crossed 10,000.
Yeah, I remember that.
It's 40 plus.
Come on,
okay?
10,000.
So a little correction isn't so bad.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
We're about to turn 250 years old, right? We're still pretty young for a country. These are our, like our angry teenage years. And what do you do when you have a teenager who's threatening themselves and others? You just try to get them through this period alive so that their brain can fully form.
So that was a Alyssa Slotkin of Michigan, the moderate on The View, getting Joy Behar and everybody to nod along with them. We're just impetuous teens. That's what Donald Trump is. That's what America's done. Put a 78-year-old in office because we're still in the crazy teenage years. Martha McCallum joins us now, author of The Story, coming up at 3 o'clock today. Martha, did Senator Slotkin not realize that we were watching this, that we'd actually hear this back?
You know, I think this is a very I was listening to Victor Davis Hanson a couple of weeks ago. He kept saying, you know, we're not in the middle of a revolution. We're in the middle of a counter-revolution, because what people voted for in this country is a return to common sense, a return to normalcy. Yeah. And he was arguing that the Obama years and the four plus other Obama years, as he phrased it, under Joe Biden, were full of tearing down statues, cancel culture, the, you know, DEI, disintegration of religion and American culture in a lot of ways, he argued. And he believes that what people voted for in November is a return to common sense, a counter revolution to move beyond that period. Apparently, Alyssa Slotkin loves that period. She's enjoying the angry teenage years that I think a lot of Americans see on the other side of the aisle.
And I was just watching. So we're watching Mahmoud Khalil's trial today. He's going to get a quick hearing to see if we can deport him. He's in jail in Louisiana, and we hope to throw him out for violating his green card and associating with a known terrorist group for the unrest we've seen in Colombia over the last 2.5 years since the attacks on October 7th. And who knows what he was doing before. And we're watching Democrats rally to his side. And this, to me, is another... Should trans men play in women's sports? Are you kidding me? This is an 80-20 issue. You're going to bat for somebody who thinks that Hamas was right on October 7th, whose group was handing out posters trumpeting Sinwar as a great leader and Nasrallah as someone who belongs, someone we should show allegiance to? That's what you're defending?
You know, I think this is going to be a very interesting case to watch move through the courts. It will define, I think, in many ways, how you can break your agreement with the United States of America under the privilege of having a green card. I thought Caroline Leavitt was very on point yesterday when she talked about the incredible opportunity that Khalil had when he came to the United States of America to attend one of our most prestigious universities. It is a right and a privilege to be in this country. He came here from Syria. Many people have these opportunities. But the problem for Democrats, and I think 13 of them signed this letter asking for him to be able to stay here. And then I thought it was also interesting, the Senate Judiciary Committee on their X post also said free Khalil in a post. I don't think they ever said anything about protecting Jewish students on campus who were losing their right to go to their classes. This is a confrontation, I think, that is very important to watch really closely in America. We're looking right now at a live shot in New York City. There are a lot of people out there trying to protect his right to stay here. A lot of people outside the courthouse right now. So this is a really important fight. And let's see what this judge has to say about Khalil and whether or not he can stay. But...
Right, because the thing is, did he violate it? He married an American. You also brought up, you know, you understand that sometimes you meet that perfect person and you rush to the altar, but here he comes over and is married in 11 months.
That's right.
He's a married guy still living on campus.
You said he has some credits? Schumer was like, this kid, he's 30 years old. He lives on the Columbia campus. And yes, he came here from Syria. And within 11 months of arriving in the country, he had married an American citizen. As you say, maybe it was love at first sight. And they found each other and decided to get married right away. There are a lot of questions about this young man. Who's supporting him? Why is Columbia allowing him to continue to live in campus? It sounds like he's living in campus housing, and there's some question about whether or not he is like a credit short. Maybe he wants to stay a credit short so he can stay in housing. But we got to keep asking these questions about who he is, who sent him here, and why he became a spokesperson for groups that are sympathetic to Hamas.
So one thing's emerged as the hostages have gotten out. They said that Hamas has told them while they're in those tunnels, and being held against their will, that they have direct links to American students and they have direct links to some of these terror groups in the West. And that's when we see London, see the riots in London and around in France and Paris. And then we see it here in Colombia. They're financing a lot of this. I mean, who gets up in the morning and goes, I'm going to go fight for the Palestinians. After all, they just killed and put babies into ovens. This is the perfect time not to go to class and to torture Jewish students on campus. Where does that come from?
It's so important to remind people what happened on October 7th. And the reaction from Israel was devastating in Gaza. But that's Hamas knew that if we go in there and we kill families, I will never forget the video that I watched of these two little boys screaming and crying after they watched their father get shot and killed and asking, why, this little boy, why am I still alive?
Amazing.
Because he watched his father be killed by these animals, okay? So let's remember how we got here. And I think that what we watched happen in November is, as we were talking about before, Brian, people want a return to patriotism, to common sense. This does not, it doesn't make sense that we are allowing people in this country who hate the country and who support Iran and the terrorists who want to remove us from the face of the earth.
This is why it's so important what happens next. We saw the most impossible situation. If I told you a year ago that Nasrallah would be dead, higher-ups in Hezbollah would be killed,
absolutely,
Hamas, they'd lose 17,000 people, Iran would be neutralized, the attack back would not happen because their missile defense and their nuclear program was already damaged, and they are capable of doing it, that Syria would have a dicey revolution. But one thing is clear, the Sunni leaders want nothing to do with Iran. So they're now isolated. Hezbollah is now neutralized too, for now, and Hamas is on their heels. So now you have a president in the White House who thoroughly is in lockstep with the prime minister of Israel. I mean, Hamas got to be saying, how the hell did we lose this narrative? What happens next is so critical. How do you feel about some of the blowback Adam Bowler has gotten from going into Gaza and meeting with Hamas?
Well, I think it's pretty clear that this administration believes that you can't get anywhere if you're not going to have conversations. We see it happening in Russia. President has also said he's open to negotiation with Iran, and he's basically laid on the table. And Iran obviously is the sponsor of all of these groups, from Hamas to Hezbollah and across the board. He wants a negotiation with Iran, or it sounds like
war.
They're open to taking out those nuclear sites. And because Iran is as vulnerable as you have just laid out so well, Brian, a lot of people in Israel feel that this is the moment to destroy these sites where they have these nuclear weapons, which are getting closer and closer to being available to them as they enrich uranium at levels that we haven't seen in a very long time. So are they willing to shut those down? I really think, you know, the more you listen to what President Trump is saying, whether with regard to Russia, with regard to Iran, he wants to take down weapons in the world. You know, and you think back to the negotiations that Reagan was part of. She wants to lower the temperature of, you know, country blasting, country removing weaponry in this world. And I think that's part of what he's trying to do here with Iran. But if they're not going to listen and they're not going to come to the table, they've obviously been belligerent in their response already, then I think you might see the ability to take out some of these sites.
So a couple of things are going on right now. It came out, too, over the last 2 weeks that the Russians' transmission was uncovered. The Russians giving coordinates to the Houthi rebels about where to aim for ships, how to take out ships, and, of course, don't touch China and Russia. So you see Russia's fingerprints everywhere. When Russia was using Syria, and this is why I think it's so important to pressure this government in Syria, whatever they are, to make sure the Russians stay out. Because if they can lose that base in Syria, that'll make it harder for them to get weapons in and out of Iran, because Iran can no longer use that as a lane, and that would further hurt their ability to give weapons to these moccasin-wearing rebels who seem to have the most sophisticated arms in the region.
Well,
so this is a whole thing, how it's related.
It is. But I think what's very interesting to watch in, you know, what I am seeing develop as a Trump doctrine about global affairs, he wants to empower countries with economic strength. That's why he wants to be on the ground with a minerals deal in Ukraine. And he's signaling that if we have investments around the world, Greenland, Panama, I mean, look at what happened in Panama. You now have a huge investment powerhouse, American investment powerhouse, that's going to own both ends of the canal in Panama. So this is what I'm watching super closely.
BlackRock, is it?
Yeah, super closely, because I think that what he's trying to empower is prosperity around the globe with our allies. Now, look what he did in Europe, backing away, saying, you know what, you're on your own, right? We're not going to back you anymore. We're going to make sure that you ramp up your defense. What does that do? It increases production in Europe. It increases prosperity in Europe. It puts more people to work with their defense industry. You heard this from Keir Starmer. You've heard it from other leaders in Europe. So I think that it's very interesting when you stop empowering people and you force them to empower themselves, they're on our side. Europe is our largest trading partner by far, right? So I think this is a delicate balance, but I see where he's going, and I think it's going to be interesting to see if it can work.
If you reapproach them after they've already committed and you see them actually building up their militaries.
Right.
I think Europe views their military like we view the space program. Yeah, I'd like to get it. I'd like to improve it, but I have other priorities.
They've been codependent on us for so long that they have had the luxury of not having to have a serious defense. So what they're doing is realizing that that doesn't exist anymore. We are now we're officially in a post-World War II era. It is 80 years since the war. You know, a lot of those programs and these relationships were built to help Europe after the war, to make sure that they could survive and be strong enough against Germany, you know, emerging again as a problem for Europe a third time. But we are past that now. We're 80 years down the road, and it's time for them to take care of themselves. I think they know that message, and I think they're trying to put it into place.
Now, put yourself in Macron's shoes and Starmer's shoes. If you say that before, when Joe Biden's president, a lot of people go, no, I don't think so. We have other social programs we've got to spend it on. But now they turn around, they hop on behind the microphone, they go, look, America's pulling back. We need to build up our defense. Ladies and gentlemen, I have no choice. Yeah. And then they start purchasing that.
They get it immediately. It's so interesting, the dynamic. And Biden was always afraid to push anybody in this regard. They're our allies.
He's always half
measured. And you hear when Starmer and Macron both come to the White House, what do they say over and over? The long-term relationship we share with your country, the long-term friendship. They're going back to World War II. They like that framework, and I get it because it's worked really well for them, but it's over because the president is talking about peace through strength. He wants everyone to exhibit that strength, and then he doesn't want to fight wars in the Middle East. I don't think he wants to take out these facilities in Iran based on what he has said. He doesn't like war. War is unpredictable, and you don't know how it's going to end, so you avoid it through prosperity and strength.
Martha, I think that anybody who sits in that seat knows that if you decide to strike anywhere and people die, you say to yourself, if I didn't make that decision, that 26-year-old is still alive. So I get it, and I think President Trump feels that. But I also think he talks to Saudi Arabia. I think he talks to our allies in the region, and they realize there is one problem in the area. There's problems in the Middle East, and there's problems. But if you look at what has happened since 9/11, 2001, there's one country causing havoc with the Houthi rebels, Hezbollah, and Hamas, and against Israel. And it is Iran. And if they get a nuclear weapon, then everybody gets a nuclear weapon.
Understood. And it's very clear from the president's words that he does not want Iran to have a nuclear weapon. But I think he looks at strengthening the pieces around and continuing isolation of them. You go after these, you know, look at Syria, look at Hezbollah, look at what the job that Israel has done.
China and Russia have now made a partnership.
Agreed. China is in deep economic problems right now. We need to recognize how vulnerable China actually is right now. And Russia is never as strong as they like to project around the world. Remember after the Cold War when we went in, we actually saw some of the stuff they had, rusted out equipment.
Yeah.
I remember, you know, as a college student, I was studying in Vienna, and there was this trip that you could go on to see Russia. They had like these military parades. It was all like rusty old equipment. I mean, they talk a big game. I think that strengthening us, strengthening our allies is the route to isolating and diminishing some of these truly troublesome powers, as you point out.
When the smart minds sit around in the military room and in the situation room and look at it, I think that Iran might be the one area in which it's beneficial to everyone to just take out that nuclear program.
Because Saudi Arabia said, if you get it,
we will get it.
And you may not have a moment where they're as vulnerable as they are right now.
Exactly. Thanks to Israel.
Like their entire front line of defense, I was listening to a former IDF intelligence officer talk about this, and Iran's whole front line of defense has been knocked out by Israel. And those are the areas that protect those nuclear sites. So they don't have the military protection that they used to have for them. It is a unique moment. But I think that President Trump, based on things he has said, believes that kind of you know, those attacks, they don't always have predictable outcomes.
Yep. Although Israel has shown us 2.5 years, they've been pretty awesome. So maybe that you give them the bombs.
Well, look at the change in Israel with the response to Netanyahu, right? I mean, he just kept pushing forward in destroying as much as he could the infrastructure of Iran and their proxies. And now he is much more popular.
Right. And Biden was taking credit for it at the end of his term. Yeah. Martha's going to tell us exclusively what's on her show at 3 o'clock in just a moment. Don't move.
We're going to win so much, you may even get tired of winning.
Taking back America, the first 100 days.
You'll say, please, please, it's too much winning.
Stay with Brian Kilmeade. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
I'm here in Ireland, and it's beautiful and warm. Not physically, it's actually quite cold. Moved here on January 15th, and it's been pretty wonderful. In the process of getting my Irish citizenship, as I have Irish grandparents. When, you know, it is safe for all citizens to have equal rights there in America, that's when we will consider coming back.
So, Martha, that at this moment, I almost didn't go to work today when I found out that was really Rosie O'Donnell's voice saying she moved to Ireland. And I thought to myself, how many sick days? So I call Human Resources, and they said, no, you've used all your sick days. So I came to work. Your thoughts?
Well, first of all, Brian Kilmeade has never used any sick days I can remember, and I've been here for over 20 years, as of you. So, gee, we're really going to miss Rosie, aren't we?
Oh,
I mean, who cares? Find me the tiniest violin that I can play. I mean, honestly, I don't even know why this is a story, honestly. I mean, she's totally, I'm sorry. I mean, she's a human being. She should be happy. She should live where she wants to live. But I don't know why it's relevant to the rest of us. She hasn't been, like, you know, on the scene in terms of a public thinker, speaker in years. So, who cares?
No, that's true. Okay, now I feel better. The other thing is, you have a left-wing Irish government that's really going to embrace Rosie O'Donnell's ideals. So if there is an Irish view, she might fit right in, back in that middle seat.
Let's see if they do that, though.
Who's on your show?
So Kevin Hassett is going to join us and talk about the outlook for the U.S. economy. Very important to all of us. You know, 62% of Americans are invested in the stock market. It's not a nothing issue for people. A lot of us have, you know, 401ks and investments in the market. We're going to talk to him about the future. And remember when the Biden administration said that two consecutive negative growth quarters was not a recession? We're going to talk about that, too.
Kevin Hassett brought that up, right? More to come. I'm going to watch Brian Kilmeade Show.
Thanks, Brian.
I'm Dana Perino. This week on Perino on Politics, I'm joined by former GOP strategist and host of the Rich Zioli Show, Rich Zioli. Available now on FoxNewsPodcast.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Must listen to podcasts from Fox News Audio. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.